Hey, podcast, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradol. Today, I'm broadcasting from the road. I've been out in California and in Nashville. Just got back from visiting Ford and Nissan. I'm driving a 2017 Chevy Suburban, and you can hear a little bit of wind noise. It's kind of a fun interview spot. They triple sealed these doors new this year, and so you won't hear as much road noise as you had in the past. It has a pretty quiet ride, and I got an hour and a half to kill, so I thought, why not do a podcast? So let's start with some news on the top of my head. I don't have my notes. I'm just going to kind of go with it. The podcast is out today, and I don't have a whole lot of time when I get back to my house from traveling. I'm probably exhausted from the drive, so let's do it. I know that in the recent news was the Chevrolet news that they're going to export the Colorado and Silverado to China. The idea is the Chinese elite have been wanting pickups. It's a status symbol over there. Also, the smaller metric ton trucks that they have in that market don't always fit the bill for the needs they have, especially rural farmers. And they're thinking that they can actually sell some Silverados and Colorados. I don't know, and I'll get back to you on this, whether they sell the global Colorado there. I know it's big in India. I know it's big in Thailand. I don't think it is in China. I think they have some rules there as far as exporting, importing. So it's going to be interesting. You can see the bow tie in China. There's a bunch of restrictions they got to work through and kind of oddball legislations that the Chinese government has. For example, there's a couple provinces there in China that don't allow daytime driving of trucks for the emissions. You can only drive trucks from like 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. in a couple different provinces. And that is to keep down the emissions because they have such a problem with that. And then, you know, you got to wonder some other things about whether the trucks will do well over there. You know, you're talking parking, you're talking size. The Silverado especially is a larger truck. You wonder about the infrastructure if it, as far as the highways are able to hold it. You're also thinking about fuel. A lot of people throughout the world use diesel. That's not the case in the U.S. Currently, the Silverado does not have a diesel component to it. The Colorado does. And I wonder if the Silverado will come with a diesel and they'll use that globally. It's going to start in the next year or so. They'll start looking into exporting. I'm going to hold my breath on whether it actually gets finalized with all the new incoming president in the United States and also some global trade rules on whether or not they're able to make it all work. But they are exploring the opportunity. It's along the same lines of what other people are doing. For example, Ram has had an agreement for a while now to sell vehicles in Australia, and Ford is also looking at overseas markets for the F-150. They're looking at China as well, as a recent news story I read. The big trucks, they're made big for the U.S. highways. They're made big and we're for our area up here, especially here I am in Wyoming driving, and big trucks make a lot of sense up here. I just don't know about all of the different rural areas in different countries, whether it makes sense. We do have a friend of the site who's been sending me pictures from Germany, and in the rural areas of Germany, he says that the trucks, full-size trucks, make a lot of sense. You can park them, you can just like use them, car in front of me had a Wyoming on the back of the tailgate. So it's just like Wyoming, just like the U.S., the West. It's the same idea that you can have the big space, you need to be able to haul your crops, you need to be able to haul your equipment, and you need the larger truck to be able to do so. The metric ton just doesn't always fit the bill. It's a smaller truck, it's narrower and taller than the mid-size trucks we have here, and while it's got a sturdy frame to haul more, the advancements in full-size trucks that they haul even greater than they used to even 5 years ago, and especially even 10 years ago, makes them a pretty attractive option. Another news item that came up this week that I was reading, and interestingly enough, it's about Chevy as well. Auto News is reporting that the Chevy Blazer, the Blazer name, is making a comeback. They will have a new Blazer. We're seeing spy photos now, which makes me think that it could be at the next month's Detroit Auto Show. It's typically how things work, where you see it at the, you see spy photos, and then it's out the next month as far as it'll be a non-door opening display. The Chevy Blazer is going to be slotted between the Equinox and the Traverse. It's going to be basically the Chevy version of the GMC Acadia. It's going to be a rounded crossover. It's not going to be the big bulky Chevy Blazer of old. I would think it's going to share a diesel engine. I know the Equinox is going to have diesels, and I think the Traverse was going to add diesels as well. So it'll probably have a diesel engine option. It'll probably have gasoline options. It'll have the same interior setup as the Traverse. It'll mirror it in many ways. Latest technologies, all the Teen Driver Assist on it. They'll have all the adaptive cruise controls and all the lane departure assist on the higher trim levels. We have prototype photos. I'll have those on pickuptrucktalk.com. I'll have those later on tomorrow, the next day. Make sure you check those out. And it, like I said, I think it's going to be at the 2017 North American International Auto Show. That's going to happen in Detroit, Michigan. That is in the, I want to say it's the third week of January. Could be the second week of January. And that is the major reveal for many manufacturers. I will not be at that show. I will be at the Chicago Auto Show, where I will see the new Tundra. That about does it for news. We're entering the slow time of year where automakers are focusing on their products for next year's auto shows, and we probably won't have a whole lot of news updates for the next couple weeks. But what is important and what's going on that you're going to talk about, I will let you know. Let's talk about the 2017 Ford Raptor. It's new. It's different. It's controversial, it may be, if you will. I was just in Borrego Desert. It's a Borrego, California. It's the desert proving grounds for Ford. They use this to dial in the different suspension and tires and powertrain setup of the new Ford Raptor. They have a nice little house there. They have a nice little area to work on. They have a big open desert. So I flew there with Ford. Ford paid the way for me to go. And we went to the proving grounds, and we did two different activities. We did a rock crawling, and we did a off-road driving. What's interesting with this vehicle is the rock crawl was really what grabbed my attention. Typically with a Ford Raptor, you are not thinking about rock crawling. It's capable of doing it. But it's usually, you're thinking, I'm going to drive as fast as I can off-road. You're not going to think about climbing rocks as, say, you would a Jeep Wrangler. It's a different product. Ford wanted to demonstrate their rock crawling capabilities, so the first thing I did was do some off-road on the rock crawl. The trail out to the rock crawl, which is, you know, looks like a waterfall, if you will, I think the degree of it was 17% grade. On the trail out was a bunch of rocks and things you had to maneuver over, so you got to kind of see how the suspension was working, how well it was adapting, how much wheel travel was adjusting back and forth as far as handling different suspension. And oh, by the way, it's 13 inches of wheel travel in the front and 13.9 inches of wheel travel in the back. So we get to the rock crawl portion, and we put it in a four low, which is there's a rock crawl setting. It's one of like six driver modes, and you put it in a rock crawl, and it changes the four-wheel drive, it changes the steering. There's a lot of features that happen. Interesting to some people is that we had put the truck in neutral. Well, that was to activate the four low. All vehicles need to be put in neutral to be able to do that. So that's gonna be interesting to see what consumers say about that. It's just a mechanical thing. It's not something Ford can engineer out of. But anyways, I digress. We crawl over the rocks, and we had taken turns, so I had a partner, and then we switched, and then I did the rock crawl. It's a different animal sitting in a passenger seat and a driver's seat. Passenger seat, you know, I knew it was confident. It's got a high output 3.5 liter V6. You're looking at 450 horsepower and 510 foot-pounds of torque. So I knew it had enough foot-pounds of torque to do the trail. The trail was wide enough to fit the Raptor, which is also kind of a concern I have with rock crawling. The Raptor isn't the smallest vehicle. And I tend to prefer a smaller vehicle rock crawling so I can see my area around. But, you know, we do have the Ford Ford cameras. We can see the obstacles in front of us. We have 360-degree vision, so we can see, or as oxygen comes up, we can see vehicles around us. And then we have a new 180-degree where it shows the front bumper, the center bumper, and the right bumper. You see just tips of the bumper, and the camera pieces together a front image in front of you. So utilizing those cameras, utilizing the rock crawl feature, basically just kind of put it in cruise control and climbed our way up the top of the rock. It was maybe a tenth of a mile. It wasn't very long of a course, but you get to the top, we turned, and of course we had our nose up in the sky, and we had to make an immediate right turn, which meant we had to use the front camera to see which way we were heading, which is a great feature that in a lot of new vehicles, they have this front display camera, and it shows you what you can't see. So if you're just there, if you're rock crawling, and all you see is the hood, you can use the camera to see, actually look down. It's a really neat safety feature. Like I said, most trucks have it. The Raptor has it. So then we kind of crossed these rocks, and we made a turn, and we were going to use downhill assist control. Downhill assist control is basically cruise control that you engage, and it holds you going that same speed down the hill. What's interesting here is it uses the brakes to kind of maintain your speed. You may be thinking about this point, why not use Toyota Tacoma's crawl control? Crawl control is a very similar technology to the hill descent control, hill descent control. It's interesting because you could make the argument one's better than the other, and I would believe crawl control is better. Crawl control uses ABS brakes, uses engine and transfer shift points to stabilize you as you go down the hill. Hill descent control basically just maintains your speed by using the brakes. It's an interesting argument to be made, and it's an interesting argument that Ford puts out, like, do you really need crawl control? We can do the same climb that the Toyota Tacoma can do, and just about as well. It's not as great as using crawl control. Crawl control would be better, but we can do it. And as the Raptor is known for, we can also go really fast off-road. And speaking of off-road, we went ahead and put our helmets on, we put our harnesses on, and we went off into the desert. This is really where the truck showed off its prowess. You know, it's entry point of $50,000, so it's not a cheap off-roader, but it is an amazing off-roader. They have really tuned in the suspension. They've increased the frame. It's fully boxed front to back. They've improved the shocks. We had Fox shocks were there at the event, and we talked to them about how much they've increased the amount of oil in the shocks, how much they've re-engineered them, and how much tuning they've done. They have these holes in the middle of the shock where the oil goes in and out as far when it gets used, and the little suction piece pushes the oil back and forth. And so they have done a ton of work on the even the size of those holes, the placement of those holes, how those shocks work. And you have a sturdy frame, you have a movable shocks that are going to adjust as you go. And then they worked with Bridgestone to create a KO2 tire. This tire is really impressive. The previous generation tire was really good. This is really even better. And so when I was in a desert and I'm in Baja mode, which basically turns off, dials back most of the nannies and gives you full control of the acceleration, and the steering is a sport mode steering. By the way, Ford has three different settings for just the steering wheel. They have a normal, a comfort, and a sport mode for the steering wheel and it changes how the steering wheel input responds to you as you're driving. Another interesting thing. So when you're in Baja mode, it automatically takes the truck in Baja mode, and plus it adds the sport steering. And so Baja mode, helmet on, foot in the gas, flying around, I'm doing consistently, the first way out I did probably 60, 65 miles an hour, sometimes dumping down to 40 miles an hour because I didn't know the terrain. But I got to tell you, the more I got comfortable with the truck, the faster and faster and faster I went. And what's also really impressive with this truck is that the faster you went, the better the truck rode in the dirt or in the sand. It got better and it got better. The suspension was able to react better. It was able to handle the whoop sections better. It was able to handle dips and dips in the road, and it got smoother. So it actually encouraged you to go faster. And so as I got more comfortable with it, and the faster, and I got used to the suspension, I hit 100 miles an hour in the desert, flying around. I hit triple digits, and it's amazing. It really is amazing. I've done 140, 160 miles an hour on a track, and I got to tell you, that is cake compared to 100 miles an hour on desert sand and all the obstacles and trying not to hit bushes and trying not to do things. So I'm happy to report I didn't hit any bushes. I'm happy to report that the vehicle did great, and I'm also happy to report the tires did exceptional. And let me explain something that really was eye-opening. So as you're driving around the desert, there's these ruts, and we're hopping in and out of the ruts. What's impressive with these tires is these tires actually grab the back of the vehicle. As it wants to slide, it grabs the back of the vehicle, and it basically throws you in the rut, and it aligns you and corrects you. It's not traction control doing that. It is the tires and the vehicle controlling your truck, the Raptor, and keeping you in the line. So there's a section of ruts, and I'm driving 80 miles an hour, and I'm on it, and it's like a slot car. The tires are keeping us in the path we want to be in. They're keeping us from sliding around, and you're just getting, you can feel it. You can literally feel the back tire slapping you back into shape. And I only used traction control twice, and that's when I hit it a little bit too hard. And you could, the traction control was even more forceful, so you knew the traction control kicked on. But the majority of the time, I had no traction control. All I needed was the foot and the gas pedal, a little brake, because I didn't want to hit the brake too much and let the nose dive into like a rut and get stuck, and the tires. And the tires and suspension with the Fox Shocks and those tires working together, it created a very safe feeling environment and gave me a lot of confidence to go even faster. I do worry, and I openly do worry, that if I would have done that track two times, three times, and it wasn't really a track, it's just kind of the setup in the desert they set up for us, but I've done that run a couple times, I would likely have gotten in trouble at some point, because the truck just breeds confidence. Another amazing part of this truck is, typically with an off-road truck, you have a pro and con, okay? Your pro is that it's really good off-road, but your con is it's terrible on pavement. So take a Jeep Wrangler, for instance. Off-road, that's an amazing rig. On-road and highway, it is tough. It is a tough driving vehicle. So to get to the desert, to get to Borrego, to do the desert driving, we drove the Raptors. We drove the Raptors 2 hours from the hotel to another hotel and to the proving grounds. We didn't drive to the proving grounds. We drove from hotel to hotel. It doesn't matter. We were on the road for 2 hours. That's what I'm trying to say. We're on the road for 2 hours driving around in the Ford Raptor, and it was one of the more smoother driving trucks I've ever been in. It was really impressive how they were able to get the tires to be aggressive off-road tread pattern, to keep you in the groove as you're driving, to not be loud. Like, usually off-road tires and bigger off-road tires are really loud, to have a quiet sound on the highway, and to give you a smooth ride in normal mode. We were in normal mode, smooth ride, even with the off-road shocks. I would compare it to, maybe like a Nissan Titan, the new Nissan Titan that rides really well. Ford has done a phenomenal job nailing that, and that's really impressive. And so I would think previous generations of Raptor, which I never drove, but I have experience with, talking to owners, is that on-road it's not so great, and off-road's where it's supposed to be. But the new generation of Ford Raptor is comfortable on-road, off-road, and rock crawling to some degree. You know, it's probably 80%, compared to the competition, it probably does 80% of the job the competition does. Say a Tacoma or with a crawl controller, say a Jeep Wrangler does even more. But unless you're really doing like a Rubicon Trail, your Raptor's fine. You know, if you're going to do Rubicon Trail, that's probably not where the Raptor is going to excel at. But it does excel in Southern California in the desert. It did a fantastic job. I don't have fuel economy numbers because I drove it as fast as I could. and from the highway and driving out there, I drove as fast as I could and went through the corners as hard as I could in the canyon and just was testing out everything. Well, those down the road, the interior is laid out like a typical Ford. It looks like an F-150. It's got a nice layout. It's got some nice stitching in the seats that says Raptor. It's got some nice graphics in the different trim levels. It has a big Raptor on the side. It's got a nice tailgate and higher trim levels. That's chrome. It's a nice look to it. It will be on sale. It's on sale now, I believe. I believe it's heading to dealers. It's going to be an expensive truck, though. But it's going to be a purpose-built truck. And I could say expensive, but let me caveat that with, it's a very purpose-built truck, and if you want to off-road, it's not that expensive. You know, it's not a trophy truck price. You're looking at $50,000 to start, $49,580 or something like that. And I would think the average Raptor transaction is about $65,000. So you're getting a truck, you can off-road on the weekends, you're going to drive it to work during the week, and it does have some payload and towing. I didn't get a chance to do any towing with it. I'm curious to see how the springs or the shocks interact with towing. Typically, towing in off-road trucks is you're going to have a tailgate. It's going to drop quite a bit. You're going to have some tailgate squat. But, you know, that's just a look thing. It does nothing against the truck. It's just the way the springs are set up. It's such a soft truck. So anyways, fantastic drive. I have some video and I'll have some photos up later. You can check out facebook.com and check us out for Under the Pickup Truck Talk. You'll see some photos I took from the event, and you'll see some video I took of a BorgWarner transfer case. It's really an interesting transfer case, interesting display. I wish I would have had more time with an engineer there to kind of walk me through it all. So check it out at dealers. Check out the new look. It's got still that iconic look, still the wide wheel wells. There is some improvements. I'll have some audio later in the broadcast from the designer talking about walking through the truck. I'll go ahead and take that audio, and there's also a rolling chassis. The chief engineer was walking through the rolling chassis. I'm going to take both of those recordings I have and put them at the end of the podcast. So if you want to stick around, you want to hear more about the Ford Raptor from the chief designer and the chief engineer hanging out to the back of the podcast, I'm just going to put them right in, and you will listen to their words verbatim on what to think about the truck. After listening to my podcast in the Chevy Suburban, I wanted to also clarify the statement I made earlier about being controversial. And I mean that in the sound of the exhaust. Okay, so it's a high-output EcoBoost 3.5-liter V6. It's different than the previous gen, which is 6.2-liter V8. So there's a sound difference. In a 3.5-liter V6, there's only so much you can do with the sound. It's a V6. You don't have the displacement size that a V8, you don't have that sound that it puts out. And so it's going to sound differently to the consumers. It has a different sound to it. It's not a bad sound. It's not a whiny kind of sound, but it's not the deep, throaty sound you're used to. And so there's a lot of controversy right now with consumers online and fans who are concerned about the sound and how it doesn't sound the same. The reality is you get better fuel economy in the V6. I just was looking at the press materials real fast because I wanted to make sure I had the right numbers. And looking at the fuel economy of 15 city, 16 combined, 18 highway, this is not maybe something you think about when you think about an off-road truck like the Raptor, but it does play a factor long-term. I mean, you're not always off-roading, you're not always going after it. Sometimes you're commuting to work, sometimes you're driving around town, and you want that fuel economy. It also has that 10-speed transmission. A little controversial there with the 10-speed, a little bit questioning as far as what that's able to do. Off-roading, I never got higher than sixth gear because with the Baja mode was set up, it just kept me in that power band longer. I mean, that output of that V6 has a much better torque output than several V8s. It's faster. And so with that 10-speed transmission and the high output V8, V6, the truck is just faster. It's faster than the V8 will be. And so, you have some pro and con. You have a little controversy by those that haven't driven it. But, you know, what do you want? Do you want a big throaty sound? Or do you want a really fast off-road truck? And I'm mixed because I really enjoy driving an off-road and really going after it. But I also understand the deep throaty sound. And so it's something you got to do for yourself. Go check it out. It is a different sound. Up next, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's go back in time. Let's go back 50 years to the 1967 Nissan Patrol. Yes, a Nissan Patrol. It's a safari kind of truck. It's the SUV. You got two in the front on the bench seat, and you got two bench seats in the back that are perpendicular along the side of the truck so that we can sit. You sit opposite. You're not sitting in benches facing the driver. You're sitting alongside the driver against the sidewalls. Now, why did I do this? Well, I'm going to do a four-page feature story for Four-Wheeler Magazine on this truck because it really speaks to Nissan's heritage as a truck maker and as an off-road manufacturer. Something you don't think about very often. Think about a lot of times in Nissan, you think smaller cars, you think compact cars, you think some sports cars with a Z. It's got some heritage to it. It's got some history to it. So we had a 1967 Nissan Patrol, 2017 Nissan Armada. We had both of these SUVs. They were similar. The Patrol has grown into the Armada, basically. They're 50 years apart. And we did some pros and cons, kind of some back and forth. I drove the 67 on road. I drove the 2017 on Armada on road. I drove 1967 Nissan Patrol off-road on soft off-roading. You know, nothing too crazy. Dirt roads in Tennessee, outside of Nashville. And then I drove the 2017 Nissan Armada off-road in the dirt roads there in Nashville, Tennessee. It was really great lighting, really as far as the day. It was an overcast day with some rain. The roads were the mud was up a little bit. They weren't too muddy. And we had some water we kind of drove through. You can see it on my Facebook page on Pickup Truck Talk. We had a great time. I was with a couple of Nissan representatives. And we went through the water. We came back through the water. I kind of got splashed all over the place. I got pretty wet. We were just out there having a good time. And it was really interesting to see the differences. So, like, the 2017 Nissan Armada was really quiet, was really roomy. You could drive in it all day. It didn't wear you down. It was very capable. It did the same driving the Patrol did. Granted, we didn't do any major off-roading, but it felt really well. It felt really good off-roading with it. The 1967 Nissan Patrol, it wasn't really the case. You know, it was loud. It was hard to drive. It had three on the floor, which is interesting. Usually four on the floor. It had three on the floor at that time. It was loud. It was a 4-liter V6, so it was a big V6 back in the day. You could hear all the clanking from behind us in the back, from the windows hitting or the door hitting or just the fit and finish of those vehicles. The weather stripping wasn't around the doors. It was around the inside of the doors, so you had some additional noise there as when things hit off-road. It had very tall and skinny rubber tires that were very hard to the touch, and so those created a lot of noise on the road, and they also, we needed probably to air them down a little bit, probably for some of the soft road off-roading we did. They were really harsh off-roading. They weren't very forgiving. It had leaf springs in the front and the rear, in both the front and the rear. It had axles in the front and the rear, so it was a solid axle with sitting on leaf springs, and three leaf springs, one tiny one, one long one, one medium size one, front and rear. And the brakes were standard drum brakes, and you had no power steering and no power brakes. So you had to drive. You had to do what you had to do to drive. The first time I drove it from the hotel, we were going to drive, get a cup of coffee before we hit the road. And I had it wild on the back. I had it sideways a little bit. I had a little gas off the line and hit some water. And boy, those tires had no traction. You know, they had probably the traction spot of a footprint on the road of about a silver dollar. That's how much they were actually on the road as you drove. Because they were so harsh and so tall. And so it was fun. It was a good time. It was fun to see the differences and play around and see how rudimentary the interior is and how basic things were. And there's a flip of switch here, and that's, you know, what it does. We had two windshield wipers. Each one had their motor, and each one had a different turn for the motor. So you had a little dial on the side to turn them on, turn them off, which was really fun. It took me a while to figure out how to turn on the windshield wipers. It was a good time. It was a good time to see how far we've come. It's a good time to see, like, how amazing the Armada is compared to the Patrol. I mean, really, it's really a great SUV. And it's amazing to see what, you know, my father and his father's father and all those people before us, what they were driving, what they were off-roading in, and how much these conversations of reliability these days, technology, room, comfort, really impacting the things. And it was interesting because it's like this vehicle would have been the one that you could have drove to the store and gotten some groceries in and been back and forth, but that would have wore you down. it would have, oh gosh, I gotta go to the store, I gotta drive the Patrol, I gotta really plan this out? I need to carry tools. What's the weather like? What if it breaks down? I mean, there's a lot of questions that surround these older vehicles, which is why I enjoy driving them. They give you a different perspective. But it was definitely a fun time. It definitely was a different experience. We had a great time. I also went and checked out the Lane Motor Museum while I was there. And there is every unique vehicle that you could even think of. I saw some Subaru trucks. Yes, Subaru trucks. I saw a Tri-Van. I saw a big Lark, which is a huge army. It's an army transporter. They transported tanks in it. The thing looks like a battleship sitting in the parking lot. It is just huge. I saw all sorts of different vehicles and different brands of vehicles, very unique ones that I've never heard of. We had the thought that I guess in the 1960s they did a study and there was 320 vehicle brands, and as of today you have about 10 or 13 major automakers, and then they have the brands below them. So things have definitely changed over the years, for sure. And so it was an interesting day. It was all just a great trip, and a great trip checking out those different vehicles and checking out what the patrol was doing and what it was able to do and was capable of doing. I mean, it was a capable SUV. You go off-roading with it, and it'd do fine. But you better carry a winch, and you better take your time, and you better be ready for a driving experience. So speaking of experiences, I had on the podcast next, up on the podcast, is Lyndon Johnson. He is an automotive writer, and he contributed a piece of work for the website pickuptrucktalk.com. It is on the Grand Cherokee SRT, and I asked him to take a very specialized look at technology on that and write a very specialized piece on the technology in that vehicle and what it looks like for the average consumer who's looking to pick that up. So stay tuned. Next, we'll have Lyndon Johnson, and then as promised, I'll put the Raptor information on the end of this podcast. And welcome back to Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. This is your host, Tim Estradell. On today's program, we have a special guest. Lyndon Johnson is with us. He has written a beautiful guest post on the site. You can read it on pickuptrucktalk.com. It's on the Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT, and it talks about technology. And it usually you see these reviews, and it's like, how fast go to track? How much was a horsepower? What did it feel like behind the seat? And that's all great, but sometimes you want to know what it's like daily driving it. It's fun to drive once in a great while really fast, but what's technology like? What's the features? How does it work? And how does it fit your lifestyle? So welcome to the program, Lyndon.
Hey, what's up?
He's from Tennessee. They talk different. Anyways, so talk to us about the Jeep Grand Cherokee. It's a beautiful machine, but what's technology-wise?
It's really cool. I enjoyed driving it around with my boys. I've got a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they really loved it. They're both into cars as I am, so it was a fun dadmobile to have for a week,
Yeah,
and it was actually livable. It was a livable performance car. Like most cars, if you have this kind of performance, you're talking about like Mustangs, Challengers, Camaros, maybe the odd M3 BMW or something, but those don't handle family duties nearly as well as this did, and they couldn't tow, what does this thing tow, 5,000 or 6,000 pounds?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the Cherokee.
Yeah, I think you made a lot of interesting points about how livable it was in an article, but you also made good points about we're losing the mechanical dashes and gauges. We're going to now digital. However, absolutely, the digital ones, they look pretty good, didn't they?
They do. It's so pretty to look at, and it could do like 3,000 different things. So, if you wanted it to display like your tach in the center, you could do that. If you wanted it to display like your speedo on one side and tach on the other, kind of like a traditional setup, you could do that. It kind of depended on what drive mode you were in. So that's the good thing about like these TFT display dashboards, like gauge clusters, is that they can do so many different things depending on what you are doing with the vehicle. Like if you're navigating, they can put your nav map right in the middle of the display on the dash. It's right under your nose. Instead of having to look to the left, to the right, at the center of your dash, you can actually look through the steering wheel just like you're checking your speed and everything, and there's your map. So it has its advantages. I'm kind of an old school guy, so I like having kind of a mixture of both. I like having analog gauges for my speedometer and tach. And having that TFT display in the center is okay with me. I'm fine with that. The Jeep, in this case, had a total disco dash, as they call it. It was just all digital. So, you know, it took some time to get used to.
Yeah, it's become a big thing with me. It's like a pet peeve. Some vehicles have these TFT displays, but they don't have a digital speedometer. And I've gotten so used to this digital speedometer that I just live off of it when I'm driving around. I don't like looking at the speedometer gauge. So it's funny how we've changed and how we've adapted to that as things have changed. What other things really struck you as far as the TFT displays and things? Did you spend a lot of time messing around with, like, setting up different gauges and seeing different things? Was there something that really stood out to you?
I liked how, and of course I go into this in the article, I like how SRT, and they do this in other vehicles. It's not just the Grand Cherokee SRT. If you ever drive a Chrysler 300 SRT, it's this way. I'm sure the Hellcats probably have this feature, but all the SRT vehicles break down your telematics. So basically you have oil pressure, you have voltage, battery voltage, you have transmission temp, which would be handy, I imagine, especially if you're towing or if you're doing drag pulls and stuff like that. So it has a level of telematics information that has been missing from vehicles for so long now. It's like the vehicles that I've grown up with through the 90s and 2000s, a lot of them didn't even have like coolant temp gauges on them. They would just have a dummy light to let you know, hey, your coolant's too hot, you know? And it's just nice to see somebody who throws a bone to us gearheads and says, hey, it's okay if you're into this kind of thing. You know, if you're into taking your vehicle to the track and you want to know what's going on under the hood, then have at it. Here it is. We're going to give you the full breakdown. I mean, I imagine that the engine control module is measuring all this stuff anyway. It's keeping track of all this so that it knows whether to throw a dummy light or not.
Right.
So
right.
Why not? If you've got the capability, why not do it?
And it's interesting because you bring up a good point about these digital gauges and what they're showing. There's been a few vehicles I've driven lately that don't have temperature gauges anywhere in the vehicle. So
right.
And to me, I live in the Midwest here. You know, it gets damn cold, and I don't want to turn on the heat and have it blast cold air. You know, so it seems like it's common sense to have that. But then they put the auto heating and cooling in there, which I don't know. I'm more of a manual control kind of guy. But throughout the automotive segment, you're seeing this. You're seeing that people are changing from providing so much information to not providing anything, to giving some and taking some away. And you got to give it to FCA. And they do this really well in their TFT, and they also have the industry's best stereo system in the Uconnect system, that Uconnect infotainment system. You and I both, I think, appreciate all the functionality of it.
Yeah, Uconnect has to be one of the best going right now. I've had really good experience with Uconnect just about every time, and I'm not a guy who like has the latest and greatest in smartphone. That's the other half of reviews that you see with tech and cars is always, well, you have to take into account what kind of phone is the author using. A lot of these magazine guys, they probably got like the latest and greatest iPhone or whatever. I run around on an LG K8, which was a free low spec smartphone that I got with not a contract, but like a prepaid plan through a local cellular carrier here in Tennessee. So the fact that it can do well with a low buck smartphone as well as a high tech smartphone that has a lot of system memory and stuff, I mean, it takes a lot of engineering, I imagine, to pull that off and do it so well. But Chrysler, my hat's off to them. They do a fine job with Uconnect. And it's easy to use. It's easy to get around within the system. All the menus are logical. You know, it's not like the Mercedes I'm driving this week is crazy. Some of the infotainment stuff, trying to set up your phone and like to pair my phone was not difficult, but to pair my phone for Bluetooth music streaming took like 10 levels of BS that should not have been involved. Yeah. So yeah. There is a good way and a bad way to do things like that. And Chrysler seems to have their head wrapped around it the right way.
Oh, and I've had cars like that too, that you just give up after a while. You're just like, I can't figure it out. I'm just going to give up. So right. I have to know that before I let you go, I have one more big question for you. Big question.
Sure.
When you searched on the satellite over to the Kids Bop station, how loud did the Harman Kardon system play the Kids Bop?
It could play it very loud. Here's my thing with good audio systems. And the Harman Kardon was so good in this thing, like 825 watts. It's insane. It actually matches the Hemi for loudness. Okay, you could tromp on the loud pedal in this Hemi, and if you've got the Harman Kardon turned up in the Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT, you won't hear the Hemi. I mean, it's that good. The thing that bothers me with that is when you've got a premium sound system like that, they always throw in Sirius XM, and I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm not a fan of Sirius XM because quality. The quality sucks. Ooh. I was telling someone the other day, okay, the guy that did an audio install on my personal vehicle, if Sirius XM gave me the option to buy 10 channels at full CD quality, I would buy the 10 that I actually listen to and get that full quality and still pay the price. As it stands, I can't justify paying for satellite radio that sounds so terrible. But yeah, if you wanted to blow out, you know, Kids Bop, you could. Your kids could totally rock the town with that sound system. It was incredible.
Well, it was a great article, and I didn't realize you were an anti-serious guy. I will make sure I note of that in future references. Make sure you check it out on pickuptrucktalk.com. It's right there in the review section. Thanks for joining us today on the show.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you later. Oh, why did I do that? Gosh darn it. And that's it for this week's podcast. Make sure to check us out on pickuptrucktalk.com. Join us on Facebook on Pickup Truck Talk. And also subscribe on iTunes. And as promised, after this closing statement, you will have the opportunity to hear the full unedited audio from the event where the chief designer, chief engineer are talking about the all-new 2017 Ford Raptor. And we'll see you down the road.
Hey, my name is Gordon Plato. I'm the chief designer for all F-Series at Ford Motor Company. I've probably been in trucks about half of my career, and I've been there about 25 years now. But this is our third product in a common cab strategy. Some of the content, I'll just ground you in terms of the content. All new from A-pillar forward, and from back of the cab rearward, all new. Significant content changes versus the outgoing model year. Actually, if everybody wants to, we'll just walk around the truck. If everybody wants to get up and come over here, we can talk about some of the details. So content-wise, new fenders, new hood, unique lamps. In terms of finish, unique grille. Front rear bumpers are all new, specific to Raptor. Specific content versus the outgoing model year that we've actually invested in. We've actually invested a lot of money in the rear. We've got a unique bumper that we didn't have on the first generation. We've got dual exhaust. We'll walk around the back in a minute. And we've got a tailgate applique that actually spells out FORD, not unlike the front, to give us 360-degree harmony in terms of the styling. So if we just take it from the front, we've got a composite hood and fender. We've widened the track about 6 inches. So obviously you got to cover that with the swells, not unlike the outgoing model. It's one of the signature elements of what makes a Raptor, is the swell over the fender. Aerodynamics was important to us here. We've got active grille shutters, both in the upper and lower grille, and we've sculpted the body to have a lot of dimension and also pay attention to aerodynamics, which gave us an improved aerodynamic count, which in the end helps fuel economy if you're interested in this product for fuel economy. signature grille in the front, we've evolved where we were with the mesh grille. We've spelled out FORD work, not unlike the Ford Oval. We're proud of our brand. We place a prominent Ford Oval typically on the base F-150. Here, we're proud of the brand as well, regardless of whether it's an Oval or an FORD. We spell it out large and loud and proud in the front end. Okay, signature mesh grille that you typically don't see on the rest of the lineup. For the F-150, one of the unique things, everybody typically and lately has been really trying to develop signature light. One of the unique things about the Raptor is that these three little lights in the front, really, in a dark condition, you really know that's a Raptor when you see those three lights coming down the road. It's very simple, very unique. but in very uniquely Ford Raptor. So we've evolved that. We've actually installed them in the grille surround versus in the mesh, like you've seen in the past. This vehicle is very purpose-built. Not a lot of cheap plastic. We've got on the skid plates stamped, you'll see an actual part over there, stamped skid plate in the front, which hopefully it'll may help you out in the next couple of days. We tried to style the vehicle not like a monster truck, but like a Baja race truck. So you'll see both front and rear, we've improved the departure angle and ramp angle, both in the front. So what we've done is taken the bumpers up as high as we can, and tried to expose the mechanicals, both front and rear, which in the rear, you'll see probably the most change versus the outgoing model. But that was the whole concept. Tried to, you know, as tall as this thing is, we've tried to really exaggerate the jounce and also the ground clearance to give you that kind of that wide low look, although it does sit high, and you do notice all the suspension travel and so forth. The vents both on the hood and fenders are functional. Okay, it allows heat to extract. This is one of our wheels. This is a cast wheel. We've got two new wheels and also a new tire. Unique to Raptor. You'll see the sidewall, very unique to Raptor. Very aggressive, not unlike the rest of the body, and really fits the vehicle. Okay, we've got new running boards as well. Like I said, this is our third vehicle in the Common Cab strategy. This is a unique running board, new to Raptor. We've evolved that as well. Done some improvements and actually stamped. This is actually cast aluminum and then cast the Raptor logo in the running board. If you want to come around to the rear. So because we make this on the same line as our production F-150s, this body panel is aluminum. We had to obviously match the aluminum to the aluminum in the rear and rivet that together. You'll see the signature look we've created. This one in particular doesn't have the FORD in the back. It's an offering that's it's kind of an upgrade. We offer three different series. One of the signature pieces is the 4.5-inch dual exhaust, which is first time on F-Series that we've been able to do dual exhaust out the rear, and we weren't shy about it. So 4.5-inch pipes that dump out the rear. And you can see here we've tried to raise the raise the bumper up as high as we can to give it that Baja look, and also give you a good departure angle, as well as expose the mechanicals, which I think for people that are into this this particular vehicle, they like that mechanical feel and the real machine-like elements of the truck. Okay.
What is the departure angle and the approach angle?
23-30.
Yeah, I think we've got it. Jamal will go through the details of that. But,
23 in the back.
Yeah, departure angle is 23 degrees, and approach angle is 30. Break over at 23 degrees. Okay. A few unique styling elements on the interior. Unique to Raptor is really deep bolster. You'll bolsters in the seats. You'll get a chance to try those out in the next couple days. This one actually has a carbon fiber package, I believe, on it. Yep, you can check that out when you have a chance to go inside. Unique magnesium paddle shift on the steering wheel, and also unique steering wheel specific to Raptor, which you'll be able to experience in the next couple days. And then we also have upfitter toggles mounted, not unlike Super Duty, up on the center console on the headliner. So really unique features, and allows you to hook up with aftermarket parts and elements and lights and so forth without messing up your dash with, you know, it's very integrated and very well designed. So now we'll turn it over to Jamal.
Yeah.
For the engineering part.
Thanks, Gordo. This is, why don't we just keep walking, and we will just kind of walk around the rolling chassis. This is, I'm the engineer, so this is like the most important part of the truck right here. So, no offense, Gordo or Doug.
They don't see any of that.
But this is an all-new frame. We spent a lot of money developing a unique Raptor frame. And so we not only have a 145-inch crew cab frame, but now, for the first time ever, we've got a unique to Raptor 133-inch frame. That combination, the super cab with a short box, does not exist anywhere in the F-150 lineup. So that should just give you an indication of how really committed we were to making this new Raptor and spending and creating whatever it took to deliver a Raptor that was, which was fairly significantly beyond the capability of the Gen 1 Raptor. So the Raptor frame is, it's not only heavily revised it's not only a unique wheelbase, but also these C-sections from this area to this area, it uses, it starts life with the heavy-duty F-150 frame, but then we also further reinforce it with high-strength steel. The frame is pretty much almost all high-strength steel. And the reason we did that is that the truck, between the weight reduction with all the aluminum body and then having a crazy 450 horsepower powertrain in it, this truck is capable of such speeds off-road. It really gets, and you'll see this tomorrow, that we found that the lightweight with all the power and all the torque, we were finding that we were getting a lot more road inputs. The truck is just traveling so much faster now off-road that we truly had to upgrade the frame for the speeds that this truck was traveling off-road. So some of the key upgrades also are not only the high-strength steel C-sections, but also the top shock mount, the lower shock mount is upgraded. Of course, you've got your 9 3/4 wide axle, and you've got new 3-inch Fox Racing shocks. So the last time, they were 2.5-inch, so now we've got 44% more fluid in them, which is better fade resistance, better cooling. These are also, we've doubled the bypass zones in them now. So we'll see over there a little bit later that it really kind of gives us a lot of tuning flexibility for on-road and for off-road. Here's the dual exhaust that Gordo mentioned, and you see that we have true dual all the way up for the first time. Got a resonator here, muffler here, and we spent a lot of time working on a signature sound for the truck that wasn't trying to be a V8, because this EcoBoost V6 is takes pride in blowing V8s away. So it doesn't want to sound like a V8. It has a very special noise that I think you'll really appreciate. Here's the powertrain. You'll notice that we're now completely skid plated in the front of the vehicle, all the way from the bumper, all the way back to a trans skid plate and aero shield. So truly from the back of the extension housing forward is 100% completely protected. We've got a new transfer case. So the last generation was electronic shift on the fly mechanical four-wheel drive. We've now added 4x4 auto capability, as well as we've increased the torque capacity of the transfer case. So now what we have is you can be in two-wheel drive, you can be in four auto, you can be in locked 4x4, or you can be in locked 4x4 low. We've got the 10-speed automatic, which now with its new wider span improves our crawl ratio from about 45 to 50 to 1. So that's an improvement that the new 10-speed auto has given us. We've got the new 3.5-liter EcoBoost engine, high output, 450 horsepower, 510 foot-pounds of torque. But really, those are the numbers that everyone talks about. But really what makes this engine so special in the Raptor is its torque curve and how much low-end torque this engine offers. It's dramatically improved from the outgoing V8. Here's our top shock mounts. This is also another area which we spent quite a bit of money on, and with what we've done is we've made these two-piece units so that the top shock mount can go even higher, and we've gained 2 inches of travel in the back, 2 inches of travel in the front. So, you know, we're now to 13 inches in the front and nearly 14 inches in the back. Those are travel numbers that no one else even comes close to. Another thing, we do have a unique corner module, so unique A-arm, upper A-arm, unique lower A-arm, the same 3-inch Fox shock with 9 bypass stages. We've got our new BF Goodrich tires, and this is a new tread pattern with side lugs, so you get a lot of extra traction in snow and deep sand. And these tires are engineered and manufactured specially for the Raptor, so they've got lower rolling resistance. They also have they exhibit less tread noise. So really, it's just an all-around better tire than its predecessor. And the predecessor was pretty much the best all-terrain tire on the market. Here you have the new Charge Air cooler for the turbos, and we have twin fans in the back, and along with the trans cooler, this engine allows us the second gen Raptor cools much better, believe it or not, which is surprising for a turbo engine. It cools much better than the outgoing V8 Raptor. And then you've got the steel bumper. Again, skid plates, 4.5-inch aluminum skid plates. We've got electronic power steering assist. This is a new steering motor for just the Raptor. So again, this is another sign that that's a very expensive thing to do, is to create a unique E-Pass motor for just the Raptor. And that's really another sign of how far we went with the new Raptor. And I think that's really some of the things. Maybe I'd be more than happy to sit around and talk parts with you guys. If we can go over to the terrain modes, because this is a big.
I haven't heard anything.
A big part of now, what?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything.
And what we were finding is that in the prior gen, a lot of people weren't using the right settings, or they didn't know how to use the right settings, and it was quite a complicated chart that you had to manipulate certain buttons to put the truck in the right setting. So what we did was we've completely developed this new terrain modes, and now all you have to do is choose the terrain that you're in. You don't have to touch the drive line. You don't have to touch a 4x4 switch. It will do everything for you and put you in the optimum setting. But it also, for the expert user, you can also override everything, nearly everything, the very critical things. So, you know, like the example I was giving is in weather, it'll put you in 4 auto, but if you find you're in extremely deep snow, you can override the 4 auto and lock the transfer case in 4x4 high. So it does everything for you, but it also allows you the opportunity to customize and override settings. And I think when everyone drives in the mountains on the way to Borrego Springs, I encourage you to try sport mode. It will. It's a significant change, both in terms of the engine performance, where it puts the engine in its performance band, and the shift schedule. So that's definitely the mode to keep the car or the truck in when you're in the mountain roads.